Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, midweek Wednesday afternoon, November 20th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The nearly 100-year-old Italian Village restaurant complex in downtown Chicago, opening a new spot in its basement with a specific clientele in mind. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, the most anticipated earnings report of the season is out today after the bell as chipmaker NVIDIA releases its Q3 results, giving Wall Street the latest look into the strength of the artificial intelligence trade. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And NVIDIA Day rivals Fed Day, or maybe a jobs report day, in terms of numbers that can move markets. But how does NVIDIA compared to other stocks that had that potential to move markets in years and decades past?
Well, if I were to put a broad headline on it, I'd say it's always a sign of a very top-heavy and risky market environment when a single stock is able to move the market so much. I mean, you think about it, if most of us should be invested in index funds for the long term, and if you hopefully are owning 500 stocks, if it's the S&P 500 index, you can't imagine that one stock, which should be just a very small fraction of your portfolio, should be able to move the market so much. And it's indicative of what we all have known in recent months of just how top-heavy this market has become. And I think even though I, for one, have absolutely no idea what the earnings report will show later today, I do know that it's not a sign of a healthy market that one stock can have such an impact on the overall direction of the Dow Jones or the S&P 500.
Now, there is a term that has been thrown around on this program and elsewhere with regards to NVIDIA, and that is priced for perfection. And that is if the Q3 report that comes out later today shows any sign of a wobble anywhere, that could trigger a sell-off. And how does that feed into your theory about one stock really just kind of carrying the entire market?
Well, it's very much along the same lines. It means that if you've already discounted all the good news, then any surprise by definition is going to be bad news. And so what, just from a sheer probabilistic point of view, when you are basically guaranteeing that you're going to have some bad news come along at some point, you know that the market, well, the stock itself and as well as the market as a whole will then will have a nasty sell-off because of it. So again, it's just indicative of how dangerous I think this market environment is.
And how much of the rally that we have seen over the last 2 years is just strictly a function of investors really kind of putting their money on the potential of AI? Because you can't spend more than 5 seconds on LinkedIn with people trying to shove the term AI into anything they are trying to do. It's like, look, you don't need ChatGPT to write your name for you, okay? You don't have to demonstrate AI proficiency by doing that. But a lot of people know it is the future. People are using it. It is a part of everyday business life. But how much of this rally is based on the potential of AI, and what if the reality doesn't meet it?
Well, I mean, I think the same thing we were saying about NVIDIA is true about AI in general. It's priced to perfection. All kinds of companies that basically have no business talking about AI are claiming that AI is going to make them that much more productive. They won't need you and me as employees. They can just do it all automatically. Their profit margins will go up and so forth. And that, as you say, is exactly what has been propelling a lot of stocks forward, is not current earnings, but rather prospective earnings, which I think is going to happen because of this huge productivity boom. And if the future turns out not to be as rosy as they're guessing, or is more slowly to develop than they are projecting right now, then the market again is very vulnerable to a sell-off. So I think it's all the signs of a bubble, frankly. I mean, you know, companies have been changing their name or their projects or their divisions to include AI, and their stock price goes up, not because they've changed anything about their business model, but just because they started to use the word AI. And that is a classic sign of a bubble.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Thank you for joining us today.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The legendary Italian Village restaurant in downtown Chicago making a move designed to attract a younger crowd. Let's get the details from Ali Maradi, restaurants and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Ali, thank you for joining us today. And before we continue, for those of you who have not been to the Italian Village, this restaurant is aptly named because the village is a number of restaurants inside the space that are under the Italian Village umbrella, and one of those restaurants is getting a bit of a revamp.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's the one in the basement. It was originally called La Cantina Enoteca. It opened as a wine bar in 1955 and evolved into a steakhouse, but shut down during the pandemic. So now we have this almost 100-year-old kind of restaurant group, family-owned, the fourth generation has come in, and this is their new concept that they want to open in that basement. It's called Sodo. You know, they're going for kind of like the vibey basement feel. Some of that wood paneling from the original 1955 restaurant has been recycled, but they've renovated it. They're doing a new menu for food and cocktails, and they're targeting, you know, they don't want you to come there and wine and dine your clients. They want to target a younger crowd in their 20s and 30s that are local.
Yeah, so basically people who may be leaving work, and since the Loop is now is still one of the fastest growing neighborhoods in the city, some place that you can go just to hang out before going back to your trendy condo.
Precisely, yeah. And, you know, operating a restaurant in the Loop has been fraught with challenges since the pandemic because, you know, office occupancy still hovers around half of what it was pre-pandemic. We're seeing a lot of people coming downtown Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but Mondays and Fridays are pretty dead as far as the office worker traffic. But, you know, their argument at Sodo is that as long as they know those trends and cater to them, so for example, they'll be closed on Monday and they know that maybe they're getting the office workers Tuesday through Thursday, but their Friday and Saturday clients might be a little different.
It's an interesting push and pull when it comes to having an old school vibe, because there are plenty of establishments in Chicago that are brand new that have a decor that evokes the 1950s, and that makes it appealing. That's part of the draw. And then there are other places that literally come from the 1950s, but that same marketplace views them as passé.
Yeah, you're 100% correct about that. And I did talk to, you know, someone who runs a food and beverage consulting firm about that exact point. He said that operating, you know, under a legacy restaurant umbrella like Italian Village will help Sodo with that because they do have that history and they'll be able to tap into the crowd that wants the nostalgia instead of kind of like falling into the passé box that you talked about there.
And also they're jazzing up the music selection at Sodo. Gone is the traditional Italian music. So what's on the new playlist, and what was the traditional Italian music they were playing? Was it stuff from the old country? Was it crooners from the 50s and 60s like Jerry Vale? And what's on the playlist in the new place?
That's a great question. I don't know what's on the playlist in the new place, but I know that they mentioned opera as being something that was on repeat a lot. So they're trying to get away from that. They tested out this theory with a pop-up that opened in that space. They called it Bar Sodo. It opened about a year ago. And they said that, you know, the family deemed it a success. They had nearby hotels sending them guests, and that basement spot really turned lively again. So that is sort of, you know, they piloted their new playlist there, they told me. And, you know, that Bar Sodo will also reopen adjacent to the restaurant Sodo. It's sort of all in one space. And the bar itself is also being recycled so they can keep some of that history, too.
Ali Marotti, restaurants and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us today.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Disney will debut its latest cruise ship, the Treasure, and the company plans to double its fleet of cruise ships by 2031. Let's discuss the expansion with Matt Shapiro, president MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And before we talk about the latest offerings from the Disney Cruise Line, let's just talk about the cruise space in general. What a difference 4 years makes, because 4 years ago around this time, we saw all those cruise ships tied up, put in mothballs because of the pandemic. There was some real debate over whether or not the cruise industry would survive COVID-19, but now we know the answer. It survived and it's thriving.
Yeah, and one of the leading stocks is Royal Caribbean, which is continuing to go higher. And actually, you know, one of the quite a much bigger cruise line than Disney, you know, speaking about the new Disney ship. So Disney, of course, is extremely profitable in the parks and the cruise ships, and they're kind of actually a little behind. So they're going to double their fleet to about 10 ships with this second of the new one setting sail next month. And, you know, for about a little over $1 billion, these ships are really cash cows.
Now, Disney is going to double the size of its fleet to 2031. And how much of this is Disney trying to play catch up with Royal Caribbean, which in itself was trying to make it a more family-friendly destination to compete with Disney? It seems like those are the two main players in the space trying to get, you know, the family cruise the family cruise experience.
Yeah, and you know, Disney is a super premium line. It's substantially more expensive, except, you know, sometimes the super brand new Royal Caribbean ships are just as much. But if you look carefully at the Disney ships, it's like, you know, incredibly themed and tied into their parks. And, you know, so it's really a fundamental part of the business and keeps people coming back. Extremely profitable. The gross profit on the Disney Parks and Recreation and cruise ships is about 30%. So it is the leading profit driver of the stock. So they really, you know, obviously they made a decision that they really got to increase the penetration of their cruise ships. It's still not going to be as big a fleet as Royal Caribbean, which is about 40 ships, Carnival has 100, but in the segment they operate and the very luxury and tied into the parks and the themes, it's going to be an excellent extension and driver of the profitability there.
And some of these new ships being added to the Disney fleet, they will serve Asian markets. One will serve, as of a couple of years ago, the plan was for it to sail Chinese routes exclusively, and then there's a Japanese offering coming up in the not-too-distant future.
Yes. And so with that Asian market, of course, ties into their theme parks over there, which, again, are really profitable. And overall, you know, Disney had a good earnings report a couple weeks ago. Stocks really popped. But as everyone knows, despite the highs and lows, you mentioned, you know, coronavirus, no one thought anybody would ever be on a cruise ship, much less fly anymore. You know, the stock has definitely recovered, but it certainly has its highs and lows and really hasn't done anything materially since 2015. So, you know, Disney last quarter seemed to turn the corner page a little bit on the streaming, seems to be much better for that segment, and obviously logically, aggressively expanding its cruise ships, which are extremely profitable.
Matt Shapiro, President NWS Capital in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, finding a balance when helping kids with money.
This is Chicago's News, Traffic, and Weather Station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A deadly stabbing in Chicago prompts a response from advocates for victims of domestic violence. A verdict is reached in the killing of a college student in Georgia. It's Personal Finance Wednesday, things parents should do and avoid doing to help their children find their financial footing as they reach adulthood. And we'll tell you how you can avoid ruining your reputation. at the company holiday party. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 58 points. NASDAQ is down 133. The S&P 500 down 29. We have 48 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. The deadly stabbing of a woman in Chicago's Portage Park neighborhood yesterday is drawing strong reaction today. The group The Network Advocating Against Domestic Violence is calling on Chief Judge Timothy Evans to reassign Judge Thomas Nowinski from the Domestic Violence Division and ensure he no longer presides over any cases of that type. The organization points to the judge allowing the killer's release and electronic monitoring after he was charged in a separate attack last month against the victim, who was his wife. A judge has convicted a Venezuelan man in the killing of Georgia nursing student Lakin Riley last February. Jose Ibarra was charged with murder and other crimes in Riley's death. CBS's Manuel Bojorquez reports from inside the courtroom.
The defense tried to murky the waters a little bit, saying, look, you may have the wrong person. He has a brother. It could have maybe been the brother, but that really did not resonate with the judge. This was a case where they decided to forego a jury trial, so the judge is the sole decision maker here.
Sentencing is expected today after victim impact statements are presented. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com, based in Hammond, Indiana. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. Now, of course, NVIDIA is where the action is. The third quarter report will be presented after the closing bell today. And it seems like investors may be just hedging a little bit before the closing bell at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
They are a little bit. I mean, NVIDIA and its sway in the whole artificial intelligence theme is so important. And so you have investors, kind of taking a fairly cautious tone into that, because that's such a major thing that's been driving the overall market. And if NVIDIA would kind of lay an egg, I don't think they will, but if they would lay an egg, that would have serious ramifications for the broad market.
Speaking of eggs being laid, instead of making a target run, it seems like investors are running from target. What is behind the stock slump today?
Yeah, that's a nice segue, Rob. It's simple. They had a terrible quarter, and they had a terrible quarter, and they chose to have a terrible quarter during a time when other retailers, such as Walmart, had a very good quarter. So there's this kind of comparison now that's always been out there, is Walmart versus Target. Walmart really, really good. Target really, really bad today. So their earnings were disappointing. Their revenue was disappointing. Their same store sales of only 0.3% paled in comparison to other retailers. And not just Walmart, but you had other kind of retailers coming out with decent results. So you had TJX, you had Williams-Sonoma had a very good quarter. So, it kind of puts Target in that penalty box of where does that fit into the retail landscape right now? It can't compete necessarily with the Walmarts of the world and the Amazons of the world and the niche players it's having trouble competing with. So it's really, I hate to say it, but kind of an existential question for Target. It's where does it fit in? And is it going to continue to erode in that environment?
So you can't really say that this is more of a Target and not a consumer problem, because as you point out, everyone else in the retail space seems to be doing all right. And that cuts across all segments of the income pie.
Right. And that's what's most, disturbing about the Target is that, if everybody in the retail sector was really showing, lousy results, that'd be one thing. But that's not the case. And so that kind of puts the spotlight on Target. And how is that fitting in with this world where, again, discounters doing okay. The luxury is struggling a little bit, but that'll be okay. So you have this kind of fat middle that's a difficult place to compete in when you're in the retail sector.
I mean, I don't want to bring Spirit Airlines into this, but it seems like they're having a similar problem in that in the days before the pandemic, if you wanted just to have two wings, two engines, and a seat inside an airplane inspected by the government, Spirit Airlines was a fine way to get to a destination without breaking the bank. But now people have the ability to spend a little bit more, and they do. So they go a little bit more up market. And Target, as you point out, is kind of in that maybe the fat middle or the skinny middle in their case, because if you're looking for deals, there's Walmart, there's Dollar General, there are discount retailers that are catering to you. And if you want to spend a little bit more, go to the place that offers more, and that place apparently is not Target.
That's right. You're in that kind of no man's land, and that's not a great place to be when it comes to retailing. And you've seen that in, you know, and I don't want to necessarily compare the Targets of the world to kind of, you know, the struggling department stores like the Kohl's and Macy's, et cetera. But you kind of start moving into that territory. That's not a place that a lot of investors really want to be when they're in retail. So they're in a bit of a difficult buy, and I'll be curious to see how they work themselves out of that.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, helping adult children with money, but not doing too much. We'll talk about that next.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Many parents will do all they can to help their children, including supporting them financially, but it may be important to keep some boundaries. Let's get some insight from Craig Balaunos, founding partner and chief executive officer of the Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, thank you for joining us today. And what are different forms of financial support that parents can provide their children? And what are some extreme examples of that support continuing for a long time and harming that child's financial development?
Well, you know, it's unique to all parents and the money relationship with what I deem to be their adult kids. And Rob, I think we start with the end in mind is, when does it become behavior that's enabling? And I think that starts with seeing a failure to launch. If your financial support has caused your kids to inadvertently not launch into life the way you define it, then we got to really take a hard look at how much and in what way we're contributing financially.
Now, in my own situation, I mean, I was fortunate that the bank of mom and dad was willing to support me at various times after I graduated from college, especially, and getting that professional footing underneath me by taking care of a few expenses here and there. But during that time, Craig, there was a clear professional trajectory that I was on. It was very obvious I was making progress and moving on and making more along the way. That doesn't happen for some people.
No, Rob, that's an example. Your experience is someone who's launching into life. There's a clear natural path and progress towards an eventual trajectory out of the home. There's far too many that are struggling. And I think if you see that someone is not on a trajectory to be self-sustainable long-term, that's the failure to launch. We got to change it up. The other tall tale sign is expectations. If the adult kids are consistently asking, consistently coming back to need financial support, consistently wanting mom or dad to bail them out of credit card debt, then that, again, is a big warning sign that we got to have a good conversation about money.
And this could also be a toxic relationship on both sides, because, as you point out, by providing financial support, there is no incentive to launch. You can just kind of coast along as long as the checks come in. But that could also harm the parents' financial well-being as well, because they could work longer. They could tap into their retirement fund. So it's bad for both parties.
Well, it can be bad for both parties. The sandwich generation is real, Rob. No one's going to be borrowing or getting a loan for retirement. So kind of like they tell you during the safety brief on an airplane, if you're a parent, you got to put your own oxygen mask on first. You got to take care of yourself, because if you're in a good position, odds are it puts your adult kids in a good position. And Rob, this is right here for me. We have a child who's just about to graduate with his undergraduate degree. We have a child last year who finished up graduate school. We've created a three-step system over 6, 12, and 18 months to wean them off of insurance, rent, even cell phones, and subscription agreements to streaming services. I think it comes down to one thing. If you have a plan, and that plan is seamless and tested, you too will be okay helping your kids go ahead and launch.
15 years ago on the radio, Craig, I was talking about helicopter parents who just cannot let their children out of their sight. And back then, the helicopter parents were talking about kids who were maybe 9, 10, 11 years old. And now these kids are adults. They're 24, 25, 26. Is it possible that helicopter parenting never stopped? And as a result, the child is still at home and the parents are still paying their bills because they can't imagine their kids going away?
There is a societal change that's occurred, and I'm not here to judge right, wrong, or indifferent, but there are some parallels to what you refer to as the helicopter parent in the school, the helicopter parent in the club activities and the sports teams, and then that continuing when the children are supposed to be on that trajectory. Now, that doesn't diminish the fact that first-time home buyers are older than they've ever been. Rent is more expensive than it's ever been. There are some real struggles for this latest generation, but I think parents sometimes need to look in the mirror, and it's us against us, and sometimes we need to get us out of the way.
Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer of the Wealth Management Group at Inverness and Downers Grove. Thank you for joining us today.
It's an economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There's a sage expression, reputation takes a lifetime to build, but only a second to destroy, and that unfortunately could come to pass at the office holiday party. Let's discuss navigating the event with Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And even though you could potentially embarrass yourself and wreck your reputation at the office holiday party, that also means you shouldn't go, because you should. It's a nice thing to attend, especially because the people who run your office put the time and expense into organizing one.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have a new wrinkle now because many people are hybrid or work from home. So you do have that one time where you're going to get a chance to make an impression. Clearly, you can decide what that impression is going to be if you're mindful about one going and then how you're going to behave once you're there.
And we talk about, classical ways in which you can spin out either being overserved or deciding because you were overserved, you're going to give somebody a piece of your mind. But the reality is, if you want to successfully navigate the holiday party, don't talk about work. Talk about other stuff that may be going on in your coworkers' lives.
Yeah. So I think there's some interesting things about the holiday party, and so much has changed. One of them, of course, is smartphones. So you can pretty much just sort of think about the fact that anything that you say or do would be on a billboard or on TV, because that's pretty much what it is when everybody's got their iPhone out. The next thing is to think about who it is that you want to make an impression with. Now, clearly you want to be convivial and get along with everybody there and enjoy yourself. This is not just totally work, but I think it's important for you to find the host, if it's the boss, and say thank you early, because you may not get to say thank you later. You get that out of the way. And to touch base with the people that you want to connect with at the beginning of the party for the same reason. One, because you won't get them later. Maybe they've had too much to drink. Or the other part is you might want to leave for various reasons. And once you've made an impression and connected with everybody and done what you need to do, then you can go. Enjoying yourself is about spending time. We're talking about work is always dangerous, and you don't know who you're talking to, because it might be the significant other of somebody that you don't even know that they're connected.
And then even though it is called the holiday party, it is a business party and not a party. A couple of years ago, a decade ago, we had a team building party in the office. And this was actually during the spring. And the older employees were just having one glass of wine and going home. But the people who were maybe 1 or 2 years removed from college acted like it was college. So just remember, this is a work event, and to be on casual best behavior.
Yeah, we had a legendary office party back in the day. It was a work party, but the punch was quite strong. And there were typically 3 or 4 stories to tell the next day about somebody who ended up in the coat closet because they were trying to find the bathroom, you name it. So it doesn't make sense to overindulge. And, and that includes now cannabis as well as alcohol. And so I think the companies are responsible to provide guidelines for the party, saying these are the hours, this is what's going to happen, this is the dress code expectations. And if they haven't named that, then I think it's your responsibility to make sure you know what they are.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago.